Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Open your hearts and loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text sex regrets or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
And I'm Naomi.
We're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple different questions from a couple different listeners. Hello, everyone. Welcome to your episode for this week.
Oh, we're coming to you the very day before the episode drops.
I gotta tell you, if you're asking yourself, Andy, how are you doing today?
Which is what I was going to ask you.
Well, this is me communicating with the listeners. Communing with the listeners, you know what I mean?
You must.
As if we're in a sweat lodge of the soul.
Mm.
Gotta tell you, folks, took a nap before noon. That's how this day is going.
Iconic. Iconic. To take a nap less than 3 hours after being awake. That says so much. That's like a very revealing sentence. Uh-huh. It tells you about a person's mental state.
Yeah.
It tells you about their emotional state. It tells you about their requirements for the day.
I went to go do the housework and vacuum, but Mabel was asleep on the floor, and I was like, I can't disrupt my dear Mabel. Look at everything she's been through this year. Mastectomy, chemotherapy, bladder irritation.
You can't and now vacuum.
And now she's napping, and I'm going to disturb her nap?
You're a very kind soul, but also you didn't feel like vacuuming at that moment, and it's okay for that to be true, too.
So where are you at, Naomi?
Where am I at? Well, you know, I got my finger hovered over the order food now button, waiting for a little brekkie lunch combination to arrive, you know? But
hey, last night you did a show with Patton Oswalt and Dana Gould at Largo, one of our favorite, if not our favorite, can you say our favorite venue here in Los Angeles?
Absolutely. Absolute favorite venue. The only place where I actually stay after my set, hang out all evening.
So how do you feel after that? You crushed?
Oh, did I crush? That's nice. It was funny because I hadn't performed in a couple weeks which was my own choice. So I was feeling like a little rusty. It's so funny because it's like, obviously after all the time we had taken off, but because I had been hitting it so hard for 2 months before the special, I was really like, ooh, I'm a machine. And then 2 weeks off, I was like, oh, what is this again? I've forgotten. But it was still fun.
It was fun. You, Patton, and Dana Gould, all so fun. Like when we were leaving, we walked out of our house and a man was walking by staring at us as we were leaving the house, locking up. Almost, I would say, clocking the fact that we were leaving our house.
Of course. That's what I said immediately.
And, like, committing to memory.
The address. The number.
So he could come back and, you know.
I know.
Take our, you know. I don't want to brag about where we are financially, but I did get the big thing of cat litter at Target.
The big thing.
You know what I'm talking about. There's like a regular thing of cat litter, and then there's the big, like
20-gallon jug.
Yeah, like the kind of jug that the salt crystals that you put in your water, that my parents put in their water softener come in.
Okay.
I don't want to brag. You might have come back and been like, I'm going to take that. So I had that in the back, you know, with my anxious mind, I had that in the back of my head the entire time.
Right.
But you guys were so funny that when you were on stage, it did take my, it really did. The minute you got off stage, my brain went straight back to my anxieties. Like, the guy's rifling through my boxer, my old Navy boxer shorts right now.
Rifling through. He's trying them on, picking his favorite.
Well, some of them have badly sewn crotches, Naomi.
That's true. I know. That's so, what, honey, with Old Navy, what? Every one out of 12 items is going to have a badly sewn crotch. And that's the Old Navy promise.
But you felt good doing it?
I did. It felt good. It was fun. You know, those two Caucasian kings, as I can't stop calling them, were just very lovely and tender. Yeah. I was like, wow, I'm up here with some big dogs.
Can I tell you, Patton came in to talk to us, and he was like asking how we were doing. And I paused for a second. I don't know why I launched in to tell him the honest truth. I was I'm coming out of depression. A little, not like a real depression, but like I go that. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I realize, I'm like, why did you say that, Andy?
Yeah.
Just say, oh, I'm doing good, and move on.
And move on.
I don't know why I felt like I should be honest with a guy who I've met now maybe twice.
Right.
Once
right.
on the podcast and once in real life.
It's okay. It's okay. You learned for next time. You know me. I lean on the side of just dishonesty.
Sure.
Flat out lies.
Sure.
That's not true.
That's the Ekbergen promise.
Me and Old Navy, we're promising you the worst.
Hey, Naomi, before we tell you who the... Look, if you haven't looked at the MP3, at the description on Twitter or anything like that, who the guest is today, this is going to be a surprise in a second. But before we get there, Naomi, we have a follow-up.
Okay, yes, this follow-up comes from Xander, who you heard his harrowing tale in the H. Allen Scott episode just a few weeks ago, and Xander has come through with a follow-up.
Yeah, do you want to just give a quick, like, 2 cents recap?
I mean, you have got to listen, because it's probably the best call we've ever gotten, but Xander moved to a small town that was kind of conservative. He met a man on a dating app. Xander's a teacher.
They started dating.
They were having a dalliance, if you will, a sexual dalliance. Xander's a teacher. Xander had like a parent-teacher night, and in walks the man he's been having a dalliance with his wife. With his wife. And did I also mention this man is an officer of the law?
A Leo. Law enforcement officer.
Oh, I was like, what is his astrological sign? Okay, I see.
A Leo that's a Scorpio. All right, let's hear this follow-up.
Hey, Naomi and Andy, it's Xander again, the small town homo, now ex-teacher, calling in to give an update from the voicemail on your episode with H. Allen Scott. I appreciate your guys' advice so much. Quick update, I guess. Did not go well, obviously. He kept messaging me, kept trying to get me to meet him, and I guess deep down in my soul somewhere I knew it wasn't the right thing, and I did ignore messages, and I did just kind of try to brush the situation to the side. About a month after those conferences and ignoring the texts and things like that, he ended up calling me, asking me if I could come to their house because there was an issue they were having with the kids and he needed some help taking care of those kids, which were, one of them was my student. So I thought I was being a good person. And of course, not thinking too deep into it, I drove out there and he did not even have his kids with him. And he started giving me this weird story about how he needed to go to Colorado and he wanted me to go with him that night. And I got obvious bad vibes. Like, I'm pretty sure if I went on that trip, I probably would have not came back. I told him I had to go get something out of my car, and I left and drove home. Next day at school, there were flyers all over the school with my picture and a nice little paragraph saying, you know, this is a gay man teaching your kids and blah, blah, blah. And so what ended up happening, I mean, it wasn't the full, like, people coming out of their houses with pitchforks and torches, like, let's find the queer, but I thought of 10 for that. And so I did have to move, did lose my job. I luckily did move to a nice little town in between two bigger towns. So I do have some people now that I am able to visit and communicate with and kind of have that LGBTQ friendship connection I need. I joined what they call the pup community, which has been quite an adventure for me, but have met some amazing people through that who have been full of support. But yeah, the situation got pretty much as bad as it could get. So hopefully nobody else runs into him or has to deal with him. And hopefully his wife and the kids can separate themselves from that danger. And yeah.
What the fuck? That was not what I was expecting from that follow up. I knew it didn't go great, but I mean the flyers, luring him, trying to get him out of state. This is a Lifetime movie. This is a Lifetime movie, and I think I'm going to have to write it. It's called The Xander Story. This is crazy. This man is an act, and it's like, Andy's a cop. And it's like, surprise, surprise? Oh, are you maybe the last person who should be in a position of authority over anyone else? I'm just very glad that Xander is safe, that he's gotten to a safe house, that he moved away. I hope he is able to find another job, and like that this man has not like destroyed his career. Xander,
so
we're here for you.
Fucked up that the guy the guy got him fired like that.
I know.
There was no good way to get
right,
but like,
but also got him fired because he wouldn't hook up with him. So the fact that he's like, oh, there's a gay man teaching, and it's like, you, sir, are also a gay man or a bisexual man. You are a member of the LGBTQIA community, whether you are not, whether you want to believe it or not, sir. And you trying to tattle on other people. That is a sickness. I'm so sorry Xander had to face that sickness,
but I'm
so glad he survived, and I'm glad he trusted his gut and was like, I gotta get something out of the car and just peel the fuck out.
Also, cut to Naomi and I listening to that, furiously Googling pup community.
We did. I was like, pup? What's pup? You know, we're sex and egg. But we figured it out, and I'm glad.
Also,
that sounds like
just very vanilla.
A fun group.
Yeah, it does look like a fun group.
But
I like the masks.
I'm glad you No, the masks scare me, actually.
Oh, really? I think they're cool looking. If you look up pup community, the masks are cool, I think.
I am just so glad you're okay. Ugh, Andy, I'm sorry. This is like, it's like almost too hard to pivot, because now I want to introduce our episode and our wonderful guest, but that is harrowing, what we just
really
were told.
Yeah, really
that was
is.
Very harrowing. I hope you, the listener, are like grappling if you're doing okay. I'm going to now tell you, I'm going to give you a quick three, two, one countdown into introducing our guest just so you can transition.
Yeah. Well, do you want to brainstorm ways that we as a community can get revenge on the cop?
I mean, I wish there was. Obviously, I'm sure Xander has, you know, the receipts, right? He's got probably text messages and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I think. But again, in that town, that was like, what can be done? You know how these cops are. They protect themselves.
All right.
Each other.
Three, two, one.
We have such a fun episode today. We are talking to the hilarious, the wonderful Michael Cyril Crichton. Michael is an actor who you have seen all over the place, Heidi. He was in Spotlight, you heard. Right now, he can be seen in the Hulu show Only Murders in the Building, which Andy and I have already watched, okay?
Yes, it just started, like, what, last week, 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
And I gotta say, so it's Steve Martin, Martin Short. Biggest laugh out of us so far was Michael Cyril Crichton.
MCC brought the LOLs. Also, you can see him in Dexter, New Blood, starting November 7th on Showtime. So he is taking us through the fall.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful thing. And this episode is truly a beautiful thing. So, Andy, if you could do the honors, let's
roll it.
Michael, we are so excited to have you and to be talking to you after our pandemic Marco Polos.
Yes.
To be here now in a true-to-life Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
To be recording a podcast, which mm-hmm. is the highest form of friendship in Los Angeles.
Yes, I'm very excited.
If I'm a little loopy, this whole week I've been on call for jury duty. And
what is that like? Like, in call, do you have to go there, or do you just have to check every morning?
You got
to
check around 7 p.m. every night whether they need you the next day for a jury, or whether they've had too many plea deals and they don't need you. So, but every time I go to click on the to see if I have to come in. I'm shaking. My heart's beating fast. It's like I can't remember the last time where I've hey, we're gonna pick your show up or not, or like we're gonna pay for a pilot, like any of the like real show busy things. Like my heart hasn't beaten as fast as do I have to go in for jury duty.
I couldn't imagine doing jury duty right now or in general. But I had to do that same thing once, and I called in every night, and then they never called me. I never had to go, and then I, you know, you're clear for however many years or something.
Yeah, so fingers crossed. I got one more day, so it's driving me a little nuts. Just putting that out there.
I it's so funny because I get what you mean. I'm very frustrated by like when I don't have control over my life and I have to just wait for someone to tell me something, you know,
right.
Where it's
yes.
Like, even it's like, what day, what time am I coming to work, or what time, makes me crazy. Yet I'm like, you've gotten through now 4 days. You're not going in tomorrow. Relax. Like, I think you can finally relax.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. 7 p.m. tonight. We'll see.
Yeah. The unknown is like the worst thing in the world. The unknown is my, my Achilles heel. It drives me insane. So I get what you're saying. Just, and there's been so much unknown.
Right. I was going to say.
Let me ask you, not just life, the unknown of life, of course, the great existential question, but then like of going into the business of acting is
exactly
pure unknown.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Still is. I feel like it still is. Like every moment is sort of an unknown, and in between every thing is an unknown. So, I just have learned how to fill my time in between the show business with things that make me happy that have nothing to do with show business. Like most of my friends that I hang out with are not in the business. They don't care what I do. Which is really nice. And then I have a lot of lovely friends in the business, but it's nice to have that, because I'm always like, what's next? Where am I going? What you were just saying, what time do I have to be somewhere?
Yes. Yes.
I could ask that question every minute of the day. Like what time do I have to be there? But, yeah, unknown. Interesting.
You posted something on Instagram recently, which, you know, I suggest everyone follow Michael in hopes that this will now force him to create more content around his dog, Sharon. Okay. If we don't tell these listeners to follow you, you got to give them Sharon content. Okay.
Yes.
She's gorgeous. She's a queen among us. She's right up there with Mabel. But you were posting about you were somewhere and you remembered you worked at a box office at the same place you were attending a premiere for something you were in. Right.
Right.
And can we talk about this box office? Can you explain this office on a boardwalk?
Yeah, for sure. It was 2007. I had my whole full-time job all out of college for many, many, many years until probably 2008 was, working in box offices for theaters. So much like our friend Isaac Oliver.
Yes.
So I was working at this theater and they picked up a big client, and it was this international Spiegel tent that was going to be on the South Street Seaport Pier. And the hours seemed really cool. So I was like, yeah, I would love to, you know, man up and do that project. So I was like, oh, I have a project. This is so exciting. No one was prepared for this in any way, shape or form. The box office was a Rubbermaid shed on a pier that because it got so hot and because I felt like I was going to suffocate in it, they cut a hole in it and put an air conditioner in it. Okay. But because it was on the pier, at night, there was no one patrolling the pier after we went home. So people would just, piss in the air conditioner and
sorry. All right. I'm just going to stop you for 1 second. I assumed the end of that sentence was piss in the Rubbermaid shed.
No.
Exactly.
It was piss in the air conditioner.
Yes, because the Rubbermaid shed had a lock on it, but the back was just an air conditioner and you could hide behind the back. So people would pee, and I'm assuming that was their hidden place to pee, and they would pee into the air conditioner. So when I would get in and turn the air conditioner on, it was like this really cold urine smell, which was horrible.
It should be illegal. That's like a medical. You need workers' comp, okay?
Right.
You're breathing in cold urine. Also, wait, was the AC close to the ground?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, how are they? Getting up?
Yeah, they cut it. It was like a shed your family would have in the back to keep their tools in. Except it was me and one other 20 something, and they would at night. Also, people would like to shake. I assume shake the Rubbermaid shed, and so I'd come in and our ticket printer would be on the ground, dented. I cried every single time I went there.
Oh, no.
And then
there was the air conditioner. Was it like, you know how in urinals, they'll put a fly because they're like, hey, the fucking animals that use this urinal will aim for the fly and then they won't get their disgusting piss everywhere. You know, like that's the theory, I suppose, behind putting like a dot, yes, or a right. fly in a urinal.
It makes it like a fun little game.
Okay. Is that what the air conditioner was for these people, for these disgusting creeps?
Disgusting creeps. I imagine it was. And it was like, again, like I can't even, well, there was, and I really didn't want to get into this on Instagram, but I'll tell you, there was a time where someone dutied behind there. And I just imagine it was like a hidden place where people could do whatever they want because it was a shed on a pier with the back of it sort of hidden. There was a night, what I was talking about was there was a night when, you know, there were lines and lines of people for this thing, and they were all sort of, they weren't all terrible people, but there were a lot of terrible people.
and there was, in New York?
Yeah. And there was a woman that's, was like, there were two lines, and I said, could you please step to the side? And she goes, you don't have to be so fucking gay about it. And I took her credit card, and I have a little bit of a temper, I would say. I threw the credit card out the Rubbermaid shed down the boardwalk. Now, there was like a little tiny hole where we could talk out of the Rubbermaid shed, and my hand was there, and her husband or boyfriend or whatever he was, I hope they're still together, he tried to pull my arm out from under it.
Oh my God.
It was terrible. It was terrible. But then I just went to see a screening of the first two episodes of Only Murders in the Building, which is a show I'm on. And it was on that pier. And I didn't realize it until we were watching the screening. And I was like, oh, all the memories. What a sort of full circle moment. Yeah.
So wait, you said your anger can get the best of you. This is paraphrasing.
Which is very surprising to me because you are so kind, so warm, so mellow.
Yes.
Thank you.
But I'm curious about what are the things, what are the other instances perhaps where your anger has gotten the best of you?
Well, you know, I haven't really understood my anger until recently because I didn't start real therapy until I was 38 and I'm 42. Mm-hmm. I'm 42 now. Cut that out. Just kidding. You can have to. I don't care. But I've learned that I use it to so I don't get sad. So like if I'm uncomfortable, if for any number of reasons, actually, if I'm anxious, my go-to will be anger because it's a protector or whatever.
Yeah.
But my anger comes out in very stupid things, like things that are not worth getting angry about, like dropping a chicken finger or
come on, no, that I would be furious. If I had six chicken fingers, I lost one of them to the ground, I would lose it too. I'm on your side.
Yeah, like and it's fast and furious, and like you know, and I worked in customer service for so long, and that I feel like is I honed that anger there. So it's something I'm trying to chill out on and work on. But I have a little bit of a temper. I think it's an Aries thing.
Interesting. Aries. No, I will not support any astrological support for any personality trait. Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah.
Fair.
I did have a vision of you listening to the Smiths and punching up one of those punching bag things.
That was... It would have been that, but it would have been like Bikini Kill or something like that, for sure.
You've been married a long time, right?
Yeah, we've been together. We've been married. Well, let's see. We've been together 17 years, and we've been married for 5. We got married on our 12th anniversary, so we could keep the date. We got engaged on our 10th anniversary, and then we 2 years later was the same date on a Saturday, so we did that.
Yeah, that's what we want to do.
Yeah. When do you know when you're going to do it?
Well, Delta's really throwing
us. I know. Delta's throwing us off. We were hoping,
a monkey wrench in the matrimonial works, but with that next March was the thought.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Lambda or Zeta will be melting the flesh off our bones by then.
Oh, the unknown. I'm so angry about it. It was funny. I didn't marriage was very complicated for me, like just to wrap my head around it. It wasn't something that I really ever thought I would do, ever even seemed like an option for both of us. So we both grew up very Catholic, have escaped that, but it was not something that I grew up, knowing was an option. Like, I mean, of course, you know, I knew, but, when he proposed, we kind of knew it was going to happen. And of course I want to spend my life with him, but it made me feel very, very nervous, about just the institution of it, the sort of, the whole thing. But then, like, as soon as, like most things in my life, like as soon as the thing happens that I'm worried about, I feel so good and I want to do it 100 more times. Like I loved our wedding. I thought it was so fun. And, I wish we could do it again and I could plan it again. So I wasn't, coming at it from a place of like super anxious. But it was so fun. And then once we were married, I was like, this is really nice. I like this. And it doesn't have to be what, you know, there's no rules to what, marriage is as far as traditional. Like, you know, I grew up thinking like, you know, all that stuff that you're told when you're young about. And I just didn't know what, it was going to be like for me and him. And it's been really, really nice.
What was the picture in your head? Like, what did you think it was?
Was it just heterosexuality? Is that what it, were you talking about? Or is it more other roles just within a relationship?
I think it was boring. I think I was afraid it was going to get boring and it was going to get stale and we weren't going to like go on dates and do fun things. And it was going to become very rigid. And it just wasn't. It actually became, it's been a nicer sort of deeper life. And, you know, a lot of good stuff, I've never talked about this, but my grandparents have not known who Brian is or that I had a Brian for our whole relationship. And for a number of reasons, like I'm not a brave person. Everybody else in my family knows, my mom, my aunts, everybody loves Brian. They've known him from the beginning. My grandparents didn't know. They weren't at our wedding. It was kind of like a secret. And but once we got married, there was sort of like this, we're together now forever and we have to, and we're going to act accordingly. You know what I mean? And then, sort of one of the good things that came out of this whole two years. I'd say it's 2 years now, this whole 2 years of the pandemic, was he met my grandparents, under sad circumstances, but under necessary circumstances because, he's my husband at this point, and we had to go, to a funeral for a family member. And, I just told my mom, I can't do that alone. And so Brian's coming and we're just doing this now. We just did it. And now it's like, you know, I know the issues that that brings up for my grandparents, but everybody's dealing and that's not my problem anymore. You know?
Yeah, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Literally never spoke about that because everybody, you know, would, I'm the gayest person in the world. Like everybody would assume that everybody knows that, but my grandparents just didn't for a really long time for like a whole number of reasons. And, so it's kind of freeing.
I can imagine. I mean, but it's also so interesting to me because everyone else in the family knew. So it's almost like I feel bad for your grandparents because they're out of the loop in a way, right? I'm like, how did everyone keep this quiet? To them, around them, everyone else knew.
I think it's a very Irish Catholic thing.
Okay.
We don't talk about it. We don't talk about it, you know? There was never a lie. There was just never talking about it. But, you know, that's done now.
Yeah.
He's my husband. I don't go ahead.
Do you feel a change in yourself? Now that they know?
Yes. I mean, I'm less anxious. It's been like, very much so. I would say it was a big, my entire life, a very big, thing that made me very, very nervous all the time because I never acted like someone else around them. And I never acted like someone else when they were around, like when they would come to plays that I did in college and whatnot. And I think there was a miscommunication. I think I was trying not to tell them to protect my mom because, she lives next door to them, all of this stuff. And I think that it went on way too long. And it was truly the most freeing. I would say it was the most freeing thing that's happened in my life. And it was just like, there wasn't even a big thing. It was just Brian came with me and now he comes with me all the time, you know?
Yeah.
We don't really talk about it, but it happens. It seems very like, it doesn't seem, I don't feel like a courageous person in any way. I've never, I just, because it was not something I talked about with them for a long time, but it feels really nice to not have, secrets are fucking killer. They just kill
you. You're only as sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
And so now did Brian though, was there ever any pressure on his end, you know? And was he really like, tell him when you want to tell him? Or was he like, I demand to be known?
No, he was, because I'm so close with my mom and my aunts and everybody, and they love him so much, and we would always spend time with them and whatnot. It was kind of like, if they don't want to know, they don't need to know me.
Okay.
Like it was very, very patient and understanding throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's the reality of an Irish Catholic family? I know the TV version of an Irish Catholic family. And I guess my friend Kirk from high school, I guess, but that was like more, I think the suburbs, level all the differences between like ethnic groups and
religions. Maybe Pennsylvania suburbs particularly.
Okay, Pennsylvania suburbs, let's just say that. So like, I don't know, besides the fact that like I went to religious school and he went to CCD, I don't know much.
What's CCD?
That was like
Catholic Children's Day?
It was Catholic school on
Sunday
on
school, sort of like, Sunday school for public school kids.
Okay.
Yeah, but they did on like Wednesdays, and I went to Hebrew school on Tuesdays.
Okay.
So what's the reality for you, or what was like your specific reality?
I went to Catholic school from first through 12th grade until I could say, no, I don't want to. I went to church every Sunday. I would go to church at school like probably twice a week. Mm-hmm. It was very – I was Christian of the Year, which was a thing that my grade school had from first through seventh grade.
Whoa. Sorry. Hold on. That's, sorry. I don't mean to keep interrupting.
Amazing.
Christian of the Year. You just said Christian, right? Not just Catholic.
Yeah.
Christian.
Yeah, like Christ-like.
What did you do? What did you do to earn that title?
Real?
How old were you?
I was from first through seventh grade. And then seventh grade, I lost it because I was like, you know – dabbling by then, and they could smell it on me. But
so you held this for years running.
Yeah, I was the boy and there was a girl one, and it was like your class and the teacher voted, and the school was like, it's the school that my family went to, like, and there was a nun who over the loudspeaker every day would say, think like Jesus, speak like Jesus, and ride the bus like Jesus. So it was very like, you know, it was about being kind and whatnot. I never lobbied for it. They gave me the little pin that looked like an angel. I had seven of them. Maybe it was still sixth grade. I think I lost my crown in seventh grade. But yeah, it was this weird thing that the school created, and that was it. A lot to live up to. So then I got to high school, and I was like, I want to be a bad boy. Not really.
What was your, like, not rebellion, but as you said, you're dabbling. What was that where you were like, I had a cigarette, or like, I went out to parties?
Oh, I smoked cigarettes so early. Like, well, I smoked cigarettes for so long. That's actually why I started real therapy, not couples therapy, was because I stopped smoking. And then I was like, why am I so angry? But I probably smoked from like, I would say eighth grade until I was 38.
Whoa.
A lot. And hi, cat. Your cat.
Sorry, now there's a butt in my face. Okay, focus.
So yeah, I would like, you know, I was – but my mom taught at my high school, so it wasn't like I could be too rebellious, because she would find out everything. But I would, like, you know, cut my hair wrong, quote unquote. Yeah. Like, you know, I wasn't supposed to have a certain kind of haircut at school, but I would do that, and I would start listening to punk music. And, you know, I went from very quickly from like, you know, Kathy Dennis to like Bikini Kill and Sleater-Kinney and all of that stuff. And I would just listen to music and go to parties and, you know, smoke pot and experiment with boys and do that kind of stuff. And that was all high school, but it was all like shrouded in shame, of course, because that's what, if you want to know what Catholic, like Irish Catholic life is like, it's shame. And nobody's telling you to have it. You just have it. And you know, and you know you're always going to have it until you learn not to have it. So that's what I'm doing.
So I'm an honorary Irish Catholic.
I was going to say, yeah. Sounds pretty also Jewish, I guess.
Yeah. By the way, I'm also going to say this. As far as I know, nothing in the Bible says you can't smoke. Nothing
that's
in the Bible
true.
Says you can't smoke.
Yeah, but I would never do it again. I'm so mad I ever even did it because I thought it was so gross. My mom did. And I was at a party once and I smoked one and everybody was like, whoa, we're so lightheaded. And then I went home and stole one of my mother's and I was like, this is so gross. And I watched myself smoke it in the mirror and then I just fucking did it forever. Like I just kept doing it and I loved it so much. But like, I just can't imagine my life if I didn't do it. It would have been... there'd be a lot less worry, you know, about all that. A lot less hypochondria and stuff, but
Yeah. It's so, I met you probably before your smoking time, but I've never seen you smoke. And because you don't, quote, sound like a smoker, meaning you don't have like a raspy voice, you know, or you don't like cough and stuff.
Hey.
Right. I'm like, for 25 years, you smoked 25 years.
Yeah.
You're doing okay health-wise, okay? We got to just keep on it.
Yeah,
get your X-rays every year.
Yes.
But, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Dexter, what a new knife. Okay, wait. Shame. If I can probe this a second, just because something rose in my chest when you mentioned that. How did you perhaps get beyond shame?
Oh, I'm still getting beyond it all the time. But it's like, I guess. I would say realize, well, there's also like, I feel like with shame comes this sense that you're the center of the world. Like that, anytime I do something that it's going to be, bring shame to myself and my family and the rest of my community. And what am I talking about? No one cares. Like just sort of the, getting the understanding that like no one cares. Get like what you do. And I find that I am the only one that is putting these, feelings on myself. So it's, you know, I think that it was really helpful realizing like, oh, I'm not the center of the universe and no one cares what I do and I shouldn't care what other people do. And I don't judge people for things that I would find shameful for myself I've been told I should find shameful for myself. So, that's been really helpful.
What about judging others? Interesting.
Not judging others and not judging yourself.
Huh.
Oh, it's really tough. It's really tough.
That's a tough one.
Super tough.
I judge myself all the time. But I also feel like, here's the thing though, and this is something I've always struggled with. The work of an actor, among many things, is this self, it requires a self-consciousness, right? We're told early on what our type is and who we are. Like we're kind of prescribed this is what you're allowed to play. This is what you convey to other people. And you have to know that, right? You need to know what you're presenting and know how people see you in order to do the work. And I don't know how you do that properly while also treating yourself with loving kindness, you know, or not being judgmental or all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so hard and I like fluctuate with it. Like I'll go from being wildly confident to extremely insecure within like 10 minutes. I'll go from feeling like, and I truly do feel like sometimes I can honestly say I am a fucking excellent actor. And then other times I'm like, you can't do it. You're not right. Major imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to reconcile that stuff either. But what helps me is like, okay, people see me this way. For a long time, people saw me as a certain type of character, like sort of a mean, you know, like a shopkeep, like a nasty little shopkeep.
Nasty little shopkeep.
Yeah. Here's your receipt. which I love playing nasty little shopkeeps, but I personally couldn't find myself sustaining a lifetime of doing that. So then it was like making choices as far as whether it be writing or what I chose to audition for eventually, sort of pushing it in a different direction, sort of showing the vulnerability. And then once you see, oh, I can be seen both of those ways, maybe I can mix both of them together. Don't always get the chance to do that, but it's always more interesting to me when a character has both of those sides of how people see me and then like a little bit of something else. But yeah, it's constant judgment of oneself all the time. Like even like with this, you know, where we are now that we're having to tape and watch ourselves all day, every day. It's tricky, but it's just, I try to not take any of it too seriously, which again comes and goes. It's the same as you know. Yeah.
Do you guys see yourself from a third person point of view when you're out in public?
Absolutely.
I'm constantly seeing myself from other people's points of view.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And adjusting my behavior based on that.
Right.
Like, if I think, like, sometimes I'll be like, you know, when we lived in New York, and I'll be on the subway and I'll just be like lost in thought, and I'll realize that like someone thinks that I'm looking, and it just happens that someone's in my eyesight because I'm lost in thought. And so I performatively act like I'm thinking. Like when you're lost in thought, you don't move your body. You're just lost in thought, so that they know that I'm thinking and not looking at them.
Right. So you don't want them to think you're staring.
Right.
That makes sense to me. I used to do this thing and I didn't even realize I did it until a friend asked me about it. Because I'd be so uncomfortable, like leaving a bathroom at a bar or walking through a bar. If I had left a bathroom from a bar, I would always wipe my nose as though I had just done cocaine, which I'd never done cocaine in my entire life. But it became like a thing that I would do to just be like, you don't have to look up and you look like someone who just did something. I mean, like literally, I don't know. I've never done it. So, but I think I was wiping my nose correctly, and I always thought it would make me look more interesting. That's psychotic. I don't do it anymore unless I'm really uncomfortable coming out of the bathroom.
I didn't just urinate on a fly. I was doing coke.
it's funny because I was, as a kid more so, I was always afraid to get up. What you're saying, cross a room? Like, do anything by myself. Like, I remember little stuff, like being at a restaurant where there was a buffet, and I was like afraid to walk up there by myself.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, everyone will be looking at me, get food or something. It's like, literally no one cares. But I was like, and I'd be like, I tell my mom, I'm like, come with me or whatever. She's like, no, get up and go. Like, she was a little mean about it. But she was just, but I was so afraid. And I remember that feeling very viscerally, being a kid. And just being like, I don't want anyone to look at me. I remember being afraid to leave rooms as a teenager because I was like, they're all going to talk about me when I leave.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
you had that, like, they're all going to laugh at you in your head.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. But I remember like holding my pee, like having to pee so bad for hours because I was afraid to get up and go to the bathroom because I didn't want to give them that opening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the evening, just like, and it's just like, good God. Good God.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah, it's so hard to be a human.
It's so hard to be a human.
Yeah, it's real weird. I wonder sometimes like that idea of what I was just talking before about like the idea of getting over shame is realizing you're not the center of the universe and no one cares. And like how you just said, no one cares if you go to the buffet. But like, I don't know. You had a single mom, right, Naomi?
Mm-hmm.
I did too. And I had all my aunts and my grandma around me. And I was showered with like center of their universe in such a way that like, I wonder if all that love sort of also brought with it like this sort of thing where I'm like, wow, everybody's worried about what I do, you know, in the world, you know?
Totally. Because I also think there's something too, because I know my mom, you know, my mom always said to me and felt like, your behavior, the way you look, the way you do, you're a reflection on me as a parent, as a person, you know. And then especially once I got to private school around rich white people, it was also like, now I'm a reflection on her and a reflection on black people and a reflection on the scholarship program, right? All of that stuff, that is like a lot to carry when you're 11, you know? And I think that definitely, I've never thought about that, but I'm like, oh yeah, that does contribute to that feeling of like, everything I do matters to everyone else. Even though really, yes, it was this one person who made you the center of their world. And then you still deal with that as a grown ass adult trying to make your way. You and your mom are close. Cause you like spend time with her, you see each other.
Oh, I love her. I mean, I absolutely love my family. Like, And what's nice about what I was talking about earlier is that now, like, my family, Brian, is part of my family, my whole family. So mm-hmm. we go to family functions together, and it's all sort of what I always wanted and didn't know I always wanted. You know what I mean? But, like, mm-hmm. my family, I could complain about them forever. Like, oh, I got too much attention. What a nightmare. Like, they loved me too much or whatever. But they were, like, wildly supportive, took such good care of me. Like, mm-hmm. I have, like, the greatest respect for all mothers because of how my mom, you know, especially single mothers.
All mothers.
All mothers. Maybe not all mothers. But, you know, I am close with her for sure. Because we're pretty close in age. I mean, she's 43. No, just kidding. She's but she was a teenager when she had me. So,
oh,
like,
okay.
And my aunts were all younger than her. So it's like I almost have no siblings, but a bunch of siblings.
But yeah. Okay. Because I was wondering when because you said your grandparents live nearby.
Yeah.
Near her. So I was like, because your mom would be like 60-ish.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that y'all are close though. And your friends, but also, because in a way, it can be a double-edged sword sometimes. You know, when your parent is young, mm-hmm. it can, depending on how they mature, right, over the
right.
time.
Gilmore Girl Syndrome.
Yes. You can have Gilmore Girl Syndrome. Is she a Lorelai?
Yeah, are you the Rory to her Lorelai?
I don't know if I'm the Rory. I am not.
Are you the Lane? The Lane to her Lorelai?
Which one's Lane? I haven't seen a lot of Gilmore Girls. So.
That's okay. That's who it is.
Rory's best friend, Keiko Agena.
Oh, maybe I'm Lainey.
Okay, feeling good, knowing where you fit in the Gilmore Girls cinematic universe. I think that now that's a really good time. We can start like answering people's relationship questions because I think we've got your background. We know where you're at.
Okay.
And now that will inform the listening. You know what I mean?
All three of us suffer from shame from different origins.
Correct.
It seems like shame. Who doesn't have shame? I want to know.
There are people out here who just move through the world. There are people who eat without like saying that they feel, quote, guilty. Like there are people who are truly free. And it is baffling to me. I'm always like, I mean, and this is different though, because what you're saying, because I always say, I'm like, did someone tell you you were enough at a formative age? That's what I think when I see someone free. I'm like, oh, somebody told you were enough.
Right.
It sounds like they told you were enough, but then you had the Catholicism kind of undercutting that.
Too much. You got to get it the sweet spot. if you hear too much, you become the center, the shame. You become this like gravitational well, and the shame gets sucked in.
Yeah. You don't want to be called too much. One memory from Catholic school is that, and you guys are younger than me, right? But I feel
Not really, but
I'm the same age.
And I also went to Catholic school till fifth grade.
So like at like the formative age of like six, right around when I lost my Christian of the Year title, I remember being made fun of for the way I walked because I walked with my head up, like my head up. And this kid in a couple years older said I walked like I was conceited. And conceited at that time was like the worst thing you could say anybody was. And I feel like it totally was one of those things that like buried itself in my head my whole life.
Yeah. And so you hung your head down, pretended you were doing coke.
Exactly. It all makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What are those little things that like get in your head? Like I remember my friend Paul made fun of the way that I drank a 20 ounce of coke. Instead of like tipping my hand, I tipped my like body or not my body,
your
like
head.
My head to drink the 20 ounce of coke. And he made fun of that. And then it stuck in my head and I changed the way that I drank. Who gives a shit one way or the other how you drink a 20 ounce of coke? But it gets fucking stuck in your brain. Some neuron won't shut. It's that neuron in your brain that won't shut the fuck up about it then.
Right.
Totally.
I had so many things. I would not wear sleeveless anything because I had stretch marks on my arm. Now you see me out with these arms thick as two tree trunks and I'm letting them out. But I literally like, and when I was a kid and it was like, you know, again, you go back and you're just like, if I knew what I knew now, your girl would have been out here in two-piece bathing suits with a tank top and running free.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and like back then I was like, don't look at me.
Tassels on your nipples.
Honey, I would have been a burlesque dancer. A sixth grade burlesque dancer. That's how you lose Christian of the Year.
Totally.
Because you're doing burlesque. And I just...
Naomi, your feather... why do you have so many feathers everywhere? Hi, I'm Naomi's mom.
Yeah, I love that voice. It's a lot.
And also Michael, I would, 25 years I would, of smoking.
I would button my top button because I thought it was like vulgar for people to look at my neck. Like I thought it was like too much because I was always in a uniform for like 12 years. Yeah. It's all I wore.
Yeah.
God, I'm so happy to move past that because this neck has to breathe.
I left Catholic school, like I finished in fifth grade, then I went to Dalton, you know, private school. But I remember being really excited that I would get to wear my own clothes. And so technically I had a lot of years to learn fashion, but I'm really convinced that like starting out with uniforms, I was just like, yeah, I never want to have to try or think this through. Like right. I loved it. And I, you know, once I did have to pick clothes, it became the bane of my existence. Like, what do I wear? What fits? What matches? And then if you're not a size extra small or a zero, the girls make fun of you. And I was just like, God damn it. Put me back in that plaid jumper, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be such a pleasure to just know every morning what was going on.
Yes. And everyone else fit right in.
So you really do want a dystopian future where we're all wearing the same jumpsuit.
Yeah. Does it have to come with a dystopian part? But I would certainly love...
You can't have one without the other, Dan. But you don't get everyone wearing matching jumpsuits without dystopia. Sorry, I don't make them rules. Isaac Asimov does.
What if it was a Zootopia? If instead of a dystopia, we lived in a Zootopia, and then...
You mean Beastars? Our favorite anime on Netflix?
Yes.
Why don't we take a quick break? And
yeah,
we'll be right
it.
Back with your advice questions and Michael Cyril Crichton.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, y'all. Wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us mostly spilling the tea and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show.
And we're back
with MCC. Now, MCC, people, honey, they come to us. They come to us at different phases in their journeys, okay? And they're sending us DMs. They're sending us emails. They're sending us voicemails. And we just have to have an open heart.
I thought we'd start off with a little bit of a softball. This comes to us anonymous from Instagram by direct message. First off, all the love. Question, should I try to date a coworker? Bad idea or best idea? Thank you for making the pandemic manageable. I had a big breakup at the beginning of it, and I happened to find your pod the same week. So much love, Naomi. So much love, Andy. That's the thing. I liked this as a softball because there's no information. Should I try to date a coworker? Bad idea or best idea? Ever date a coworker, Michael?
No. There's something about, like, working with people that makes them disgusting to me. No, but I just, like, those two don't line up in my head usually. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think if I've ever dated a coworker. I think in high school I had crushes on all of these straight guys that I worked at a coffee shop with, mm-hmm. and then realized that's not going anywhere. If it is, it's not going anywhere good. I think it's doable. I think it's doable, but it wouldn't be my first choice. But what do you think? I don't know.
Okay, here are my things, though. I think, in general, no. However, it could be worth trying if the person and you are the same level at work. One of you can't be the other person's senior, because that can get just dicey and weird. But then also, how close are you guys in physical proximity? Like, if you're on the third floor and they're on the fourth, maybe. Mm-hmm. But if y'all are, like, two cubicles over, you're seeing them at all the meetings.
You're assuming it's an office. What if it's an Amazon warehouse? What if it's Arby's?
But exactly. I was like, oh, I wasn't done. Okay? I was like, and if it's not an office setting.
What if it's the White House?
And it's, well, that's still an office setting. But if it's not an office setting, and it is, like, as you just said, Michael, like a coffee shop or something, and you guys, like, again, are in, like, in close proximity around each other all the time, nope. Not unless you are ready to leave that job on a moment's notice.
No, I say, if one of you is the fry cook at Arby's and one of you is at the counter, I say do it. I say burn it. Because burn it down. Who gives a shit? You'll go to Burger King if you...
But that's my point, though. You saying it like everybody can just go from job to job. Sometimes once you find a spot that'll take your crazy ass, you got to stay there.
And that will pay a $15 minimum wage.
A $15 minimum wage.
At least.
But
I wonder, like, I don't... I know it works, obviously. But, like, I don't even want to... I would never really wanted to date anybody in the same field as me who did the same thing because I just think it's too complicated.
That's what I said, Michael. You know? And you know what, honey? Sometimes your heart wants what it wants.
Love is love. Love is love. but like, yeah, I feel like I've worked so well with Brian because we do not have the same we're not in the same business, but there's an appreciation of what each other does. But then I have great friends who are do the same exact thing, and they're wonderful couples that have been together forever. So, like, there's no hard and fast rules, but I would say maybe don't date the coworker.
Yeah. Where did you guys meet, not being in the same biz?
Friendster.
What?
The year was 1933. I went on a date with someone that was friends with him, so he was sort of connected to me on Friendster, which for young people is...
Right, I remember Friendster.
You know, before MySpace and before Facebook. and I wrote him a message, and then I heard that he was from the other friend, that he was going to be at a bar that night, right around the corner from the box office that I worked at. So I went to the bar. And I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, I wrote you a Friendster message." And he said, "Hey, I didn't write you back." And then it sort of went from there. Yeah.
Wait, sorry. What was the third line in this tableau? Hey, I wrote you a Friendster message. Hey, I didn't write you back. What was your response?
I was like, "That's okay. We can talk now." And then I was surprisingly bold. And just like he was just getting out of a relationship. We had hung out that night, and then I went back to the bar the week after. I really had to do a lot of work to make it work.
Okay.
He secretly came to see me perform to make sure that that wasn't going to be a nightmare, which I always,
very smart.
I'm really glad he did. And then it just kind of kept going. But yeah, we met online and then met in a bar that night because I was like, I'm going to go say hello to him.
Yeah. But what was it about his Friendster profile that even made you feel like the idea to like leave the house and do anything is huge to me. So you didn't know him yet. So was it literally, you were just like, he's cute?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it was, he had like really nice blue eyes, and he was on a red futon, and he was looking at the camera, and my message was, you have really nice eyes and a really red futon. And that's all I said. And then, because, I mean, the bar that he was going to be at that night is Nowhere Bar, which is like right was right around the corner from the box office that I worked at. So it was like very easy. It wasn't like I was like getting on a train going 30 minutes, 40 minutes. So it was easy to do the stalking.
That's a good match. You could see the blue eyes in my mind popping against the red futon.
Absolutely. I mean, it's sort of the way Sharon pops against red. Sharon Dog.
She's right behind me.
I know. I see her. Such an angel.
So I think what we're saying is, if you feel like burning it down, if you don't work in proximity to this person, go ahead. It's a bad idea in any, and if you're the same level, if there's no power dynamic.
Yeah.
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 Otherwise, don't do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's a good, absolutely.
Having no other information, I think that's actually pretty good. I think we've given pretty good advice.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be like a real softball. We'd just go around round robin and be like, no, 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 move on.
No, we're thoughtful people. Okay.
Yes.
Why don't we do a voicemail now?
Hey guys, my name is LB. I just had a quick question. Well, it's not quick, but let's talk about it. So my ex cheated on me. We were together for 2 years. I was working out in theater, you know, living my dream, and I guess I might have been emasculating him in some sense of the word. That was his explanation, when I confronted him about cheating on me, because I found out about it. I know exactly who he cheated on me with, but he does not know that. But his explanation to me was that, I was moving too forward in my life, and it was emasculating him and how he felt. And so in turn, he felt that he had to cheat on me. Well, now we're about a year and a half, 2 years into being apart from each other, and we're starting to reconnect. And he wants to, you know, start having relations again. Now, my thing with that is I still love this dude, even though he cheated on me, and I've gone to therapy and I've done a lot of stuff, and I still realize that he was the one person who actually, so far in my life, has figured me out as a person. He's understood me, but it's just a thing of now, you've already planted the seeds of distrust, and I've already found out. So now, if you want to mess around again, is it just us? Are you trying to get back in a relationship, or are you actually just trying to mess around? Because I have other things I have to do. I have stuff going on you don't know about, sweetie. So, all right, guys. Thank you so much. That's my question. Please help me out if you have any suggestions. All right. I love your podcast. Bye.
Oh, okay. My gosh.
Very visceral reactions from both Michael and Naomi.
Real, real quick, and then Michael, I will let you talk.
Yeah,
okay,
please.
When you say, like, and here's the thing that I have also had to learn, too. When you're like, well, this is someone who figured me out, who got me, so that's why you still are kind of attached and you value this person. Baby, LB, you ain't a damn Rubik's Cube, okay? It ain't that deep, okay? Just because it took you time to make this connection does not mean that you will not make it with other people. It does not mean that other people will not quote unquote get you. So that for me is a moot point. That is a moot point. This person getting you, and that being partially why you still have these feelings. Okay. Okay. I can now stop talking. Michael, tell me your thoughts.
LB sounds really lovely. What disturbs me in the story is the way the conflict arose, or the way the conflict was explained by ex-partner, because I think that's a real cop out to be like, I feel emasculated, so I had to cheat. I think that's not like, there are other ways of talking. There are healthier and more appropriate ways to talk about, like, your career's moving faster than mine. I'm unhappy with where I am. Can we talk about this? It doesn't make sense to me that would how the cheating and that go hand in hand. The person, in my opinion, should have had an adult conversation and talked about what was bothering them. And then, you know, if it just, it doesn't make sense to me that they would, it seems cruel to put it all on him. Absolutely. And say it's because of his success, because that makes, I would imagine that would make LB feel bad about his success. And that's a shitty thing to do to someone. So
it's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. Very, it's fucked
very,
up.
Like, plainly say it's fucked up to do.
And I don't know that, I don't know. It seems like there's a lot of history there. So I don't know that, like, just hooking up again could be just hooking up. And that's something that you'd have to think about. Like, is it even possible to keep the emotions out of it? Even if you say it's just going to be fooling around and hooking up, is it possible to keep the emotions out of it after some heartbreak and some betrayal? And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of trust stuff. I hope that they can recover, but it sounds messy to me.
Yeah. Did LB say he's still in love with his ex?
I can't remember.
There was something.
Well, he still loves this person because he understood him so much. But also, though, LB's not saying, I want to just hook up. LB's like, does he want a relationship?
Right, that's the question.
Right, and it's like, well, LB, it sounds like you might want a relationship. Yeah. And I don't think this is the person who can give you what you want because of so many things. You have them being, this person is insecure. This person doesn't know how to handle your success. This person doesn't know how to use their words when they're feeling these kinds of things. And this person showed you that when they don't feel comfortable, they will sooner cheat on you than deal with the issue at hand.
Yeah, you can't be with someone who's only happy when you're not at your best. Like that, right. That's just like the exact opposite of what it should be. Like they need to be like building LB up because LB's doing well. Even if it's, and if LB's in the theater, if it's for a moment and he's doing really well, that should be a time where it's all joy and you're not feeling like you're emasculating. Like the emasculating thing really bothered me a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, cause it's like you're his partner. You said they were together 2 years. Build him up. And if you're not doing great, figure out how you can handle your partner's success and deal with your lack of success at one point, which is not always forever. It just feels like a real mind game there and a real excuse. It was like, and if you wanted to hook up with someone and you wanted to open it up, have that conversation. Mm-hmm. Don't make it about your partner's success. It's really messed up.
That's the thing that like, that's the nugget that I keep going back to where it's just like, first of all, I think the whole thing's a bad idea. Don't hook up with him, period.
Yeah.
But, like, the only scenario I could see where you possibly get back into a relationship, if that's what your ex even wants, is if your ex has dealt with that shit. Because, like, that's fucked up. Like, I mean, Naomi, you are much more successful than I am. My masculinity is not based on that. In fact, my masculinity is not based on what I do in this business. It's based on how much weight I can lift.
Yeah, brah.
But like if that like that's a deep problem that your ex has possibly not dealt with.
Yeah.
And it goes to like the core of that person.
Yeah.
And like if they can't figure that out, that's like a years long journey probably.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also going to say this, you know, and I'm sure, you know, maybe we'll get feedback from people who have been the cheater. But I feel like with something like that, when someone shows you who they are, believe them, listen to them. LB, he's shown you who he is, or at least who he is at this point in his life. And he is someone who's obviously feeling insecure and struggling. And, you know, you took some time apart. Obviously, you broke up and you took up. Now you're like kind of friends again. But I would like to know, what did he do in that time y'all weren't talking that would imply he's even ready for this? Did he go to therapy? Did he, you know, make amends to you in any substantial way? Was there anything like that? Or was it just, you know, the feelings subside and then it's just like you send a text one day?
Yeah. Or right. Or did he just text WYD? ?
Well, because it sounds like LB did the work, right? Or was doing work on himself. Like he said, he went to therapy. He's figured out a lot of stuff. Got to be a two-way street there. If there's growth, you know, different. I don't know. I just think it's a bad idea.
I don't think it's good at all. I think this person is trash. Hey, I don't even think you need to be friends because they do not respect you.
There may be growth, but as long as it ain't metastasized.
Wow. Okay.
workshopping that one.
I was trying for an Oprah moment or something.
I could tell by your finger. You were giving us a finger wave.
I did a finger wag and like a little head bob. Hey, you know, look, you gotta try. You gotta stretch.
You gotta.
You gotta like reach.
You gotta try.
Sometimes I'm so happy. Fail. I'm so happy I was here for it.
Michael, do you have time for one more?
Yeah, I have totally.
All right. Well, then we'll do 10 more. all right. Here we go.
Hi. I'm going to try again. This is my second time. I'm going to try to be more succinct. So your podcast is such a source of comfort in these times, and you're both so bright and beautiful. So thank you for lifting my spirits every week. I'm calling about – so I've been married for – over 10 years to a lovely man. We've got kids, a dog, everything like that. And we used to have a good sex life, and now we do not. We have had sex maybe 4 times in the past 10 years. We've talked about it a lot, and we've talked about it in therapy a bit. Also, he says it's not that he is no longer attracted to me. He also liked the physical, so he can get it up, so it's not that either. It's hard to get to what's going on. I know, Naomi, you've said that you've referred to yourself as sex negative, and so I guess my two questions, main questions are, what is sex negative, and also how do, you know, Andy and you both kind of negotiate that? And I'm sorry if this is too private, but I'm curious, and I'm wondering if perhaps that is what my husband is, and if he's, you know, is it permanent? And all of this makes my identity, sexual identity, kind of confusing too, because I'm feeling like maybe I'm polyamorous, but it's hard to know, given that I've been in like a forced celibate marriage for a long time now. And I want to be able to support him in whatever he is, and me also. And so that is my question. What is sex negative? What do you guys think is, you know, what can you shine some light on this at all? And that's it. I'm not going to give my name because I don't want anyone who I know to connect the dots and, you know, for my husband's privacy. So I'm just going to go by Blue, as in sad. And also, I hope you both have a great day, and I look forward to hearing your input on this. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
She sounds, I mean, first of all, this sounds like the loveliest person ever heard. That's so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Naomi, why don't we, because like I do, so Naomi has made a joke in the past about being, I say I'm sex neutral. She says she's sex negative. This is in relation to the let's say millennial kind of like sex positiveness, where they're out talking about sex all the time, being like, I'm horny on the main. And I think, Naomi, if you want to just explain, because I think some listeners do get the confused sex negative and like asexual. You are not asexual.
Yeah. It's so funny because you and I talk a lot about how we don't talk about sex on the podcast, like our sex lives, you know, it's like the one thing we try to keep.
That is the boundary we have kind of drawn. We have some privacy in our, in our life that we don't share with the public.
But here's what I will say for me, like sex negative for me is like, here's the thing. I will say this though. I am affectionate. Like I like to be close. I like to cuddle. I like to kiss. So it's not that I don't like, I like physical affection, but I think, for instance, like I'm very rarely horny, you know, like as a phrase. And if I am, I'd almost rather just take care of it myself, because sex is like work. And so it's like there's some worry.
By the way, what a T-shirt. Very rarely horny.
Yeah, that's me. But sex is like work. And so there's times, and I think also I struggle with focusing. My brain really will start thinking about everything else. And so it's really hard to kind of like, I don't know about y'all, but also like when you're in sex mode, it's like a different vibe. Sure. And like staying in sex mode, like I'm always like, I'm like, what are we doing? This is so ridiculous.
Look, not to bring up the King Creep, but it's like that, like in Annie Hall where he talks to the like dumb couple.
Uh-huh.
That like,
you know, I don't know Annie Hall well enough, but you could go ahead.
But they have sex. He's like, how do you do it? They're like, well, we're dumb and we don't. Like, our brains are empty, and that's how, that's how we're able to focus.
Okay, yes. So then, yes. So it's similar, like, that kind of thing. So that's a thing I, like, that's just, like, an issue. That's, like, a thing I have. And so, for instance, like, that's not great, necessarily. Like, there are times where I'm like, huh, how can I kind of get away from it? I think the point is that, like, yeah, sex for me is not the primary way I show love and affection or receive love and affection. Mm-hmm. It's not through the actual, like, sexual act. So that's I think that's what it is to me, but that doesn't mean like I don't like doing stuff,
right? But without getting, I don't really want to talk about it,
right?
But like, I think we have a pretty healthy sex life. It's just that like,
it's been more than four times in 10 years,
right?
Most certainly.
But I think that's the thing. That's that's why I like. I keep saying I don't want to talk about, but I'm like, I have we have to say something to like differentiate what actual being sex negative. It's
no, I think it's, as I said it, it's like, you know, the sex act isn't the main thing for me. Mm-hmm. It's not. So
but it happens.
Yeah, it happens. It's just like not, you know, like my, I don't know. So that's what I mean about that. And also I'll say this. I mean, you said you guys talked about it in therapy. You talked about it in couples therapy, but I guess what I'm wondering is, you know, he said it's not being attracted to you. It's not a biological, like, it's not a biological issue. Is that what you would call it when she talked about, like, erections? But,
it ain't a dick thing.
Yeah.
Yes, medically put, it ain't a dick thing. but there's something going on. There's something else happening that he's not telling you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the questions I would have that you don't have to tell me, the question of, like, is he like watching his pornographies and masturbating? See, I'm sex negative. I don't even like to say these words, but it's like, you know, is there a sense that there is sexuality? Like, you know what I mean? Like sexy time taking
place. Is he spending his orgone in another, in another casino?
Well, and also Michael, you've been in your relationship for 17 years. That is a long time. That's longer than this person is saying. I mean, married for 10. So maybe longer. Yeah. It's like, you know, I would imagine there have been times where it ebbs and flows.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, sex is pretty important to me, and but there's so much around it. So there have been times where it is not as frequent as it has been in other times, and everything else is kind of full. It's also like, you know, when I've been down at times, he's been down at times, and you do not feel sexy when you're like anxious or depressed. And, sometimes those periods are longer than others, but I would say for both of us, it's something that's important to our relationship. Mm-hmm. And it sounds maybe like it's important to Blue maybe, or unclear if it's important anymore because it's been so long. I feel like there's like, I don't know how to, like, if there was like a couple months where we never had sex, say, I don't think that's ever happened actually. But if there was, it wouldn't be like, I wouldn't be like, it's over. You know, it's not the most important thing in our relationship, but it is something that is important. So if it was lacking, we'd have to talk about it, which is good that I feel like it's good that they're talking about it. But I wonder, it's hard to know that it's not her.
Of course.
Like an answer. I mean, the unknown again is just horrible, but like, I guess maybe is there a conversation they can have is like, is there something that you're into that you're afraid to tell me about that you like, do you have something like a kink or something that causes you shame that like, you know, like you like, do you like being slapped around? Do you like this? Do you like that?
Like balloons.
Like, are you into balloons? Right. Or whatever. like, is there something that I can give you that can help us move forward? Or is there something that we need to figure out? Like, I don't know. I just don't know. There's got to be a conversation to try to get to the bottom of it without, you know, shaming her partner.
Right.
Just,
Right.
I would say this, though. I'm sorry to interrupt you, because part of me is like, I get that. And I feel like that's a common way we tell people to approach that kind of thing. But I wonder if instead of, in a way, that puts the partner on the spot. Tell me something that I don't know.
Right.
And so I wonder if instead you express the honest feeling of, it really makes me feel sad that you don't want to be with me sexually. Because
right.
I think if you are, when you say that to somebody, especially a person who loves you, a person who, you know, you co-parent with and you're in this life together with, that will affect them. But they don't want you to be sad or hurt. And then he may be real. Like, it's like, I don't want you to feel shitty. So, okay. But this is where I'm at.
But Blue said that they've been in therapy. And I want to know, like, what is at the, like, if Blue has already said stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, we don't know, though. We don't know. Like,
we don't know.
So many people, we could all be in therapy and not be honest. We could all be in therapy and not do the work outside of it.
Yeah.
Right. We can be in therapy and not even say it in the middle of, you know, right. in the actual session.
Right. I have this problem. It's the same thing when, like, earlier when I was saying, like, doesn't everyone see themselves from the third person point of view? And then,
right.
And then it's the same. I just assume, like, I'm like, what's the point of going to therapy if you're not going to be honest? Like, you're just like, wasting time. So I just assume, like, everyone,
I guess the real thing to get to the bottom of is, like, what does Blue need and what does Blue want? And if Blue needs or is interested in having relations outside of her relationship, is her husband down with that, and is that something that they can handle? Like, because it is possible to be in a loving relationship and she could have sexual relations outside, but then they have to come up with ground rules and they have to see if they're both comfortable with it. But she should not be in a position to put her pleasure in the back seat for 10 years. Like, she needs, if it's something that's missing in her life, she needs to get it somehow. Not get it somehow in a way that I'm trying to make it, you know, whatever. I just think that, like, if she needs something, she's entitled to it. If there's a conversation and a road where she can, if she cannot get what she needs from him, can there be an arrangement, or can they put some ground rules down? I mean, the dream would be that they both come together and have, you know, a healthy sex life together, but maybe it's not in the cards. Maybe that's not going to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, she was even saying, though, she, like, doesn't know what her identity is necessarily, right?
Right.
So, like, she doesn't even have the room maybe to even understand, let alone act on whether, she, you know, she said, I might be poly, I think, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, to me, I'm like, what you are is you want to be touched. Like, you want to have a sexual relationship.
Right.
And so if your partner has shown that that's not something he can give you, you're like, well, okay, do I just go hook up with somebody else? But exactly, you don't know, as you're saying, Michael, like, you know, kind of like, can you keep emotion out of it? What are the ground rules? You know what I mean? Like, the actual practice of polyamory.
Right.
Because it is work, right, to maintain all that. And so, yeah, you don't know that because you haven't been able to, but I think that's also a question then, I mean, a conversation to have with your partner. And, you know, and if any of these conversations are scary, you know, I don't know if he's somebody who gets defensive or who gets angry or whatever, you know, try to have as many of these conversations in the therapist's couple's office as possible, right? So you can have, you know, someone who can kind of mediate if necessary, clarify if necessary.
Yeah.
But I think these are just conversations. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe, Joel, I'm just echoing what you're saying, Michael, which is like, there's nothing wrong with you for wanting this physical relationship.
Right.
What happened? I wonder if what happened, right? There was, Blue said they had a healthy sex life, and then it went to, you know, every 2.5 years or something, right?
Well, 4 times in 10 years.
But I'm saying,
say it was healthy before?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to know what happened.
Yeah.
If something did or did not, it may not, right?
Right.
But if there's a change, I don't know. I don't want this to be a hard and fast rule, but, like, I kind of feel like maybe it is. Something, if there's a drastic change in your life, something did it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's spontaneous change. I think there might be something that either happened in
internally
in his life
yeah.
or internally.
Right.
Right.
It could have been a realization. Maybe something happened to him. I don't know. Right. But like, what was it?
What was it? And what gives me hope about it is that you can hear the love in her. You can hear that this is not a relationship that's like gone past its expiration date. This is not a relationship that is, you know, there might be this issue and it sounds like a very large issue, but she sounds like there's so much love there. And the fact that he even is talking to her a little bit about, you know, it's not you, and he's willing to go to therapy. Like, hopefully there's a way to manage, because the love is there. Maybe their relationship is that and the other stuff is somewhere else. Like, I don't know, but I don't, it doesn't sound like it's like past its expiration date. It just sounds like there's a lot of stuff to figure out and it's going to be really hard. And I really hope they do, you know?
Yeah. Also, this is one of the things I don't say this often, but it's like, are there any listeners who have been in long-term relationships and struggled with maintaining a sex life? Would love a response email, because it's something we don't necessarily know, but
or
I also
voicemail
or voicemail. Cause you know, I love to hear where you're at emotionally, but I don't think this is an uncommon problem. You know, Blue is not a freak. The relationship's not so crazy. It's a hard thing to deal with, but I do think people deal with it. You know, like people have to deal with this all the time. And, you know, and I wonder if having kids changes the vibe, or, you know, there's so many things that can affect how we see ourselves as sexual creatures. And I think that because there's often the, what do you call it? The stereotype of like men always wanting to fuck, you know, that like they don't have a space to talk about that kind of stuff.
Right.
Like it's always assumed that like a guy is ready. And I think then they don't have a space to talk about this
what
stuff.
What
as
an
much.
Evangelical picture.
And I think you're right, Andy. Like, was there a life change or something? Even like Sharon sleeps in between me and Brian every night now. Mm-hmm. So like, we're not having sex at night. You know, that used to be maybe a thing. Like, oh, I woke up and, you know, but that's not happening anymore because our little baby is sleeping with us in between. Sharon's our dog, by the way. I wish her the best, and I hope that it works out for them in whatever way that. Way it's supposed to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. Ugh, relationships are hard. Being human's hard.
Yeah.
Like everybody said.
It really is.
Oh. I mean, I don't know. I will say this, though. Like, the idea of having sex with the same person for the rest of your life is wild. And I don't mean in a sense of sowing wild oats. Like, you got to get out there, as much as being afraid it will get boring for, like, the other person. Does that make any sense?
It's only boring if you make it boring.
Right.
It's only boring if you like dig the rut and then just like roll around in it.
Roll around in the rut.
Yeah.
That's a good way to describe sex. Instead of rolling in the hay, you're rolling in the rut.
No. Yeah. But like that's, I mean, if it, look, this is the thing. This is the about I can say this general. I can generalize with this statement. Your life is all about how you apportion out the energy that's in your body, right? What are you going to give that energy to? Are you going to give it to bullshit like arguing on Twitter? Are you going to give it to bullshit like posting anti-vax shit on Facebook? Or are you going to put that energy into your loved ones? Are you going to put that energy into your work? Are you going to put that energy into your children, your animals, your sex life? Like, where are you going to, you know, you have like a certain, you have what's this thing in D&D at the beginning? If you get a certain amount of like,
tokens? I don't know.
I'm really
D&D.
Out of my depth. I don't know why I stretched for this metaphor. Like, I played D&D like 10 times when I was like 13. But you get like you roll the dice and you get to put the numbers to your certain like your charisma and all this kind
of stuff. Right. What you apportion.
You get to apportion it out in certain ways. And this stuff only gets boring when you stop putting the energy. I thought about that a lot. This has been a constant thing in our relationship where I'm like, if I feel like, oh, we haven't gone out in a while, I'm like, we got to put energy into like having a date night or going on a vacation or something like
that. That's right. Exactly. And you can't take it for granted. Like, he can't take for granted that she's okay not having sex.
Yes.
And if he might have to come to terms with the fact that he might have to learn to be okay with her having sex with other people or lose her. Like, it does seem like there has to be some sort of not taking for granted, putting some effort in and, were we still talking about Blue? I'm like hooked. I'm absolutely hooked on her.
I know, me too. But also I'll say this too about me sometimes with Six, where I'm like, I'm not necessarily in the sexual mood again, because it's like not how I do it. But sometimes I will start and then I'm happy to be there. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes for me, it's like going, I imagine the way people say going to the gym is, where you're like, I don't feel like going. And then once you go, once you're there, you're like, I love the endorphins.
Yeah. Like seeing a friend, like leaving the apartment. Like, it's like all of that where it's like, that's like the story of my life. It's like every time I do something, like I don't want to do it. And then I'm like, I'm really glad I did that. You know, it's just,
right,
just like start and creak your way into that sex.
Oh, I think I have a good way of describing sex negative.
Okay.
It is the boundaries between your regular life, your regular mode and sex mode are thicker.
Uh-huh. Like, so I can't just flip into that sexy boundary.
Yeah, you can't just like push through. It's not like you're a basketball player running through that paper. Like they're announcing, it's like a high school. Listen to this metaphor. Hold on. You know, in high school basketball players, there's like a paper thing that they announce them and they run out and they run through that.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes. That's if you're sex positive. You can just run right through.
Right. Paper thin.
This paper thin.
Yeah.
But for if you're sex neutral, it's more like a jelly. And if you're sex negative, it's more like
a brick wall.
I was gonna say balsa wood. You gotta like crack through it.
You gotta crack through it. All right.
I mean, I'm like privately sex positive, so I'm like wrapped in that paper.
That's so good, though, despite the Irish Catholic shame.
Yeah.
That you're sex positive.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
It's good. I mean, it's like, look, I get it. I get. It's just, I don't know. I just met Shredder, cuddle on a couch.
Cuddle on a couch watching Beastars.
Exactly.
Only on Netflix.
We have to stop promoting Beastars. It's an insane program. Anyway, Michael, this was honestly the best.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
In my book, you're still Krishna of the year.
Yeah.
This was so nice. I'm such a fan of both of you, and this is so nice to talk to you.
Oh.
So wonderful.
Wait, before we go, how is Mabel?
Maybe.
Back to normal.
She's in remission.
Back to normal.
Yes.
In remission and back to normal.
She's in remission. And the last few days, she has been sleeping until like 9 something.
Not peeing inside.
Not peeing inside. She is getting through the night, honey. This is
I love it. That's awesome. That makes me really happy.
Yeah. Thank you for asking.
And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.